All right, we are continuing our study in Daniel. It's been about 2 weeks since we looked at the book of Daniel. We're in chapter 11, and we are going through Daniel and the explanation about what he had seen and what's going on here. If you go back to verse 2, in a lot of Bibles it says, the kings of the south and the north. And while this has a lot of back and forth and things going on, to me this is somewhat interesting because it explains a lot. About what happened to the land. If you think back to the time of Solomon, you know, what kind of an area do we often get the picture of a lot of the countries around Israel being like? What did he use to build the temple and his palaces? The cedars of Lebanon. But if we look at that part of we look at that part of the world today, what do we see? Yeah, the Middle East is all desert. It's a really hard place to live. There's not a lot of water. There's not a lot of trees. If we go back even further, when the Israelites came to the land of Canaan, when they were going to inhabit that land, how was the land of Canaan that was to become Israel described? Right. And when the spies went in, what did they bring out with them?
Huge grapes.
Well, today, Israel is trying to be an agricultural country once again. In order to do so, though, they are having to innovate quite a bit. The way they irrigate is quite different from the way we irrigate here. They can't do flood irrigation. There's lots of things that they've had to adapt and change and work at really hard to make themselves agriculturally stable in that area, because it was just desert. I mean, they have weather a lot like what we have here in the San Joaquin Valley, with the hot and the dry, without necessarily, well, we haven't had a lot of rain lately either, and they don't have the support system of the Sierra Nevadas or any of the other waterways that we can rely on. Right, and what we have here in Daniel's chapter 11 here goes a long ways towards explaining that. It doesn't talk about the land drying up, but we go on through this chapter, and it's been looked at, and we're here in Daniel 11, verses 28 through 35. We're looking at Antiochus the Fourth, continued. But what we get is this picture of this back and forth, the king of the north and the king of the south. What are they doing, these kings of the north and south? What do they keep doing back and forth? They keep fighting. Over and over again, they're fighting. Well, what does war require?
Marching troops, burning the land behind you,
supplies
and resources. And it requires a place to fight. So between the place to fight and the resources, war is actually very expensive. There, historically, you can even apply what's happening here to Africa. Africa wouldn't have so much desert if it weren't for the Romans. The Romans went in and they clear-cut huge parts of that country. I mean, not like acres, but countries worth of lumber was just stripped out to build boats and other things. And when you do that, what happens to the local climate and habitat? You know, they talk about global warming on this massive, large scale, and what they talk about, I don't buy into the carbon and all that, because we get a volcano erupts and it puts more stuff in the air than all a man can do. Conversely, where you see things like strip mining, where you see things like war, where they strip things out and they desolate the land and nothing grows, yes, in that area, and it's a big area, yes, we can see definite changes in the way weather and everything works in that area, because you've changed the way the climate works. When we're looking at Daniel 11, I think we see a lot of that. We see this going from Israel, the land of milk and honey, Israel, this glorious place, which is in the middle of these, and all of that area turning from something that's beautiful, wonderful, and everybody wants, into a desolate area, because man continues to destroy it. Not by polluting it, per se, but by ripping everything off the face of the earth and leaving it desolate. If you have no trees, what happens when the rain comes? It washes away all the soil. Then things can't grow. If things can't grow, then nothing traps the moisture. And when the moisture isn't trapped, then you start into this cycle. And it leads to part of our problem here in California. You know, we had these massive mudslides down south. Why did they have the mudslides? Because of the fires. What caused the fires? All the drought. We had a lot of underbrush that grew up really fast and it dried out. We're in a bad cycle here. And if you continue that over centuries, where the land is never given a chance to recoup and is continually burdened, eventually you end up with desert. You can make a desert. We as a civilization can make a desert and walk away and it'll stay a desert, because it just doesn't have the foundation anymore that it needs. Conversely, like I say, now Israel's trying to reverse the process here in 2000s and make it back the way it was. But the first time I heard this really gone over, that was one of the things that I took away from this, is that, wow, that really explains a lot. What happened to all that land of milk and honey and everything? Because I know it's not like that now. What's going on here in Daniel 11 kind of explains what happened to that. So this section here, Daniel 11, 28-35, we're going to go ahead and read through that just to see what it says here, and then look at what it's talking about translated-wise, in a sense, I guess, from the way it's written. So verse 28, "The king of the north will return to his own country with great wealth, but his heart will be set against the holy covenant. He will take action against it and then return to his own country. At the appointed time, he will invade the south again, but this time the outcome will be different from what it was before. Ships of the western coastlands will oppose him, and he will lose heart. Then he will turn back and vent his fury against the Holy Covenant. He will return and show favor to those who forsake the Holy Covenant. His armed forces will rise up to desecrate the temple fortress and will abolish the daily sacrifice. They will set up the abomination that causes desolation. With flattery he will corrupt those who have violated the covenant, but the people who know their God will firmly resist him. Those who are wise will instruct many, though for a time they will fall by the sword or be burned or captured or plundered. When they fall, they will receive little help, and many who are not sincere will join them. Some of the wise will stumble so that they may be refined, purified, and made spotless until the time of the end, for it will still come at the appointed time." All right, so this is talking about Antiochus IV, Epiphanes, plunders the Jews' temple in Jerusalem, 169 B.C. All right, so Antiochus IV would be thwarted by Roman sea power, turns his attention to Hellenizing the Jews, bans Jewish worship, and the Hebrew Bible. So that's who we're talking about, this Antiochus. And who is he fighting against? The Romans. It's one of those, this is kind of infighting. The Romans are fighting the Romans a little bit. Kind of deal. So the way the world has gone with powers rising and splitting and all that. But he can't do what he wants. He's thwarted by the Romans. So what does he instead do?
Well, let's make everybody else Roman.
Yeah. Yeah, Hellenizing. What is it, Helen? What is Helen?
actually a reference to the Greeks being the Hellenes. Normally, it used to be spoke two L's. But so it's making it so they speak Greek, making it so they worship the Greek gods, which is what the Romans worship, because the Romans thought they were Greeks.
Yes, it's changing their entire culture, trying to force them to be like them, making a unified culture instead of a mixing pot culture. It's kind of what some people think we should do in America, even though tradition, that's not what we've necessarily forced people to do. But this idea of everybody is the exact same. Make everybody a carbon copy. We all go to the exact same place to worship. We all speak the exact same language. We all do everything in this way right here. And everything gets thrown out. All your past, everything is thrown out. So going forward, we're all this way. This is the way everybody has to be. And the Hellenizing, yes, that focuses on the Greek culture. So you have your Zeus and Poseidon and the various Greek gods there, and you would bring in then your Greek prostitutes and all that, because a lot of the Greek deities had to do with partying, having a good time, and orgies and various things. All right, what's the next thing that this guy is going to do? Not the next, but what else is he going to do to the people of Israel? He's going to try and Hellenize them, and in the process,
abolish their sacrifices, take away who they are.
Yes. Abolish the daily sacrifice. Now, we can go back and look at Daniel 8 there to see some implications there. But what was the point of the daily sacrifice? What was the point of sacrifices? Was it to kill lots of animals? It was to focus on God. You did the sacrifice to focus yourself and keep yourself focused on God. It's why we're here tonight. You know, it's why we have a Sunday morning, Sunday night, and a Wednesday night service. To help us stay focused. That's why we have the Lord's table every Sunday morning, to help us stay focused. And that daily sacrifice was one of those trying to help them stay focused about who they were and who they served, and why it was important that they continued in his way. And Antiochus wanted to get rid of that. What's the this is so typical of any place, but what was the outcome?
Some along with it.
Yeah. You always have people who go along with it. Because they're not that invested in where they are or where they came from.
Same with themselves.
Tells
us that during World War II, you saw the vicious French, see others, you know, during our revolution, we had a lot of people who were British sympathizers. So even though they were born here, they should have been Americans.
Right. Yeah, the idea that I'm out to save my own neck, and whatever keeps me safe, that's what I'm going to do. And also, you got the people who are they don't like the system because it doesn't work for them. They can't get away with what they want to get away with or do what they want to do. So they'll go to the new system and try and use that. Because, you know, anything's got to be better than this, right? But that's typical, so it's not shocking. It shouldn't be surprising. Some of the Jews went ahead and just went along with this, no problem. That's always the case. What happened to the temple courts here? I mean, I'm asking these questions, but they're all on the slide.
Besides the altar of Zeus, he also put a big golden statue of an eagle in there as well, because that was the symbol of Zeus, and that's part of the abomination that causes desolation. Is the altar and the statue that went with it, desecrating the temple.
Yeah, at that point, God would no longer want to be there. Because what kind of God is God? He's a jealous God. You shall have no other gods before me. And this is going to make it very hard for the Jews who stay loyal. But again, did Daniel go to the temple to worship and pray and sacrifice? No, because he didn't have that ability.
He was a long ways.
Yeah. He was a long ways, and that kind of stuff is actually more of... those other two guys who built the temple in...
Are you trying to get
Zerubbabel and Joshua? No, no. Okay. Nehemiah and
Ezra.
They were the ones that were more involved in getting that back going and setting that up and having that be a thing for the Israelites. Shouldn't have such a blank. But yeah, the temple's desecrated. This guy is not just kind of like, you know what, maybe you guys should do this. He's really enforcing it upon the people. He's really pushing for this to be the case. He is being a totalitarian leader. All right, what do we have the wise here referred to then? It says several times the wise are going to have problems. They're going to fall. They'll stumble. And that's going to bring them out as better in the end. But who do we understand the wise to be?
The opposite of those who went along.
Yeah.
Ones who stayed true to God.
It's not the wise are the three wise men that came to Jesus because they're so worldly and understand things. It's wise in that they're doing the right thing. That's the wise thing to do. It's not wise because they're scholars and they have PhDs and they're professors. It's wise because they do that. They could still be the farm laborer in the field, but they're going to be counted among the wise if they stick with it. So these godly leaders who resist the desecration, those are the wise, the priests and all those who stick with it. All right. This is part of the deal. This is really hard on an area when you do this. If you want to see what it does to an area, you can look at photos of Syria. You know, you have this constant warfare. Well, what does that do to an area? How is it that anything can go forward? I mean, look at Syria. They've been going on for how long now with their constant... Yeah. And what can you build and what can you grow and what can you do in that situation? And we're talking, this goes on and on, back and forth for a long time. So after about 3 years of guerrilla warfare, the Maccabees... I don't know if that should be somewhat familiar to a few people, the Maccabees. They're the... Huh? Yeah, it's between the Old and the New Testament, yes. This gets into the... Right here it says, the Maccabees successfully gained control of Jerusalem, December 165 BC, and reconsecrate the temple. And you see that word there, Hanukkah. Huh?
The oil lasting.
Right. Yeah, the idea, you know, the Maccabees were fighting, trying to get control, and they had a lampstand, and they were basically out of oil, and yet that lampstand kept burning long enough for them to hold out for their resistance. And that whole time frame there of that lamp continuing to burn and all that has been turned into Hanukkah. That's what Hanukkah is. It's not... I mean, now, in our modern time where religion is really a side note to things, and we can talk about whether or not Christmas is a religious holiday. For some of us it is, for some of us it isn't. But Hanukkah was not a competitor. It's its own separate deal. It happens to be at the same time as Christmas. But Hanukkah is a celebration of a Jewish triumph. David and Goliath moment in Jewish history that comes between the Old Testament and the New Testament there. All right.
It's really Hanukkah, it's kind of like Cinco de Mayo. That one victory.
Yeah.
Out of the thousands of losses, they had one victory, and that's what they celebrate. This is not one of the holidays per se.
It's
something that's important because of what it represents.
Right. And it says, these things are in the scope of God's plan at the appointed time. Now, what's amazing is that when we look at this, Okay, we are able to put in our time Antiochus the Fourth into here, but this is pretty specific what Daniel says here. The book of Daniel chapter 11, you know, at the appointed time he'll invade the south again, and it talks about the ships, what he's going to do to the people of Israel, and it gives it point by point with only sort of poetic, that's not the right word, but only with sort of poetic language here. He doesn't spell it out. He doesn't say Antiochus. He doesn't prophesy the exact name of the person, but he comes as close as you can to fit this specifically into one place in history. And the stuff that happened wasn't like, well, it's kind of sort of like this. I mean, if you do, no, it's like this. No, this isn't, yes. Once again in Daniel, we have these prophecies, and it's not like we kind of, whatever, no. People agree without any real argument, and it's very easy to see, yes, this fits. And as has been talked about before with the book of Daniel, it causes people who don't want there to be a God, people who don't want that to be true, a lot of problems. Because the book of Daniel is very age-specific as to when it's written, and it's very age-specific as to when the prophecies happen, and there's a big gap, hundreds of years in between. It's not like somebody went back and wrote Daniel to fit these things and then said, okay, we're going to put this in right here. It causes some problems on a scholarly level when it comes to how you date manuscripts, how you look at events and what happened there. It's an uncomfortable topic, subject for them, because of how specific and detailed it is and what we can get from it. All right, so now we'll go on to the next section here, Daniel 11, 36 through 45, which we'll finish up chapter 11. The king who exalts himself. The king will do as he pleases. He will exalt and magnify himself above every god and will say unheard of things against the God of gods. Now, if you're looking in your Bibles, you should notice when it says unheard of things against the God of gods, it changes the case of the God for us to distinguish which he's talking about. And the translators didn't just arbitrarily do that. They do know when to put a capital G and small g based on what's being written. So they're not confused if we're talking about God or the Zeus, Poseidons, Asherah, Baal, and all that. But when we read it out loud, sometimes it's confusing because you can't hear a big G. I don't know how to say it. Capital God. I don't know. That sounds weird. But it is important to pay attention to the way this is written out here. He will be successful until the time of wrath is completed, for what has been determined must take place. He will show no regard for the gods of his fathers or for the one desired by women, nor will he regard any god, but will exalt himself above them all. Instead of them, he will honor a god of fortresses, a god unknown to his fathers. He will honor with gold and silver, with precious stones, with costly gifts. He will attack the mightiest fortresses with the help of a foreign god, and will greatly honor those who acknowledge him. He will make them rulers over many people and will distribute the land at a price. At that time of the end, the king of the south will engage him in battle, and the king of the north will storm out against him with chariots and cavalry and a great fleet of ships. He will invade many countries and sweep through them like a flood. He will also invade the beautiful land. Many countries will fall, but Edom, Moab, and the leaders of Ammon will be delivered from his hand. He will extend his power over many countries. Egypt will not escape. He will gain control of the treasures of gold and silver and all the riches of Egypt, with the Libyans and the Nubians in submission. The reports from the east and the north will alarm him, and he will set out in a great rage to destroy and annihilate many. He will pitch his royal tents between the seas at the beautiful holy mountain, yet he will come to his end, and no one will help him. Well, it's not here. I want to look at the first verse of chapter 11. At that time, Michael, the great prince who protects your people, will arise. I just want to throw that in there to reiterate something we've already seen in the book of Daniel. When we have great conflicts on earth, is it just an earthly conflict that's going on? very clearly the book of Daniel says this: everything that we see, what we do, this is only part of what's going on. There is other help that happens. And you can kind of appreciate the message that Daniel has here in this when you look at, if you just go back to World War II, the way some of those battles turned out, the times that America won in the Pacific, you know, when the tide turned. What? Some of those things, something, you can easily see there was something else happening that caused those. There was some confusion, there was the weather, there were a few little things, and that's all it takes in battles, a few little things to turn the tide. Yes, you have great tacticians, you have great people who can really put a plan and think on their feet and do the job. At the same time, there's these little things that happen, and battles go one way or the other. When you step back and you can kind of see back at it, how did that happen? That battle could have gone any way and it went this way, or that should have gone this way, but this really went south or wrong for these people, and they ended up losing horribly because these few little things just dominoed out of control.
And you see Dunkirk, Midway, all those things. Midway was a victory. Dunkirk was a loss, but hundreds of thousands of British troops made it across because the Germans just decided to stop in their tracks.
Yeah.
They made it a month before they continued the fight.
Yeah, why? Why? And all those guys that actually sailed their little fishing boats out and everything. I purposely didn't see that movie because I didn't even look at the rating. That I just can't do those kinds of things without breaking down. I'm horribly sympathetic, empathetic, it's kind of broken in me, but whatever reason, those things actually triggered in me quite a bit. But we're talking about this, and we see this happening, and I think verse 12 and 1 kind of throws in, is this just men doing this stuff? We shouldn't forget, especially before the crucifixion, who was in charge of the world? God is in charge of the universe, but who was in charge of the world?
Satan was working for his strong.
Yeah. Back in the Garden of Eden, God put man in control, man submitted himself to Satan, and Satan had the earth as his dominion. Satan wasn't lying to Jesus when he said all these things, and he was had him up there on the hill and said, I can give you all this if you bow down to me. That was his domain. The earth was given to him by man for his domain to a certain extent.
That wasn't just God deciding one day, okay, Satan, you just take over for
no.
100 years. It was the fact that Israel had turned their back on God.
Right. No, this even goes back there. God didn't give Satan the earth. He stayed within the rules that he created and the boundaries. He set up rules and everything. He didn't arbitrarily break them for a variety of reasons that work out well for us in the end. But even here, there are things going on. And yes, God is never taking a back seat. He does allow things to happen. And as Job found out, we don't necessarily know why bad things and horrible things like this are allowed on his part to happen. But he does know what's going on and has a better plan. But here we have this happening to the Israelites, and we have this probably going on in not just the physical realm, but the supernatural realm as well, with all these battles and warriors going back and forth. If we go back in the book of Daniel, I find it interesting that here we have this king who will do as he pleases. He will exalt and magnify himself above every god and will say unheard of things. Well, what did we previously have with the king in Daniel who forgot to give glory to God? He became crazy. Yeah. Yes, he did. But I think that's kind of a counterpoint, might not be the right word, but a counterpoint to this king. This guy that we're talking about here. Does he have any boundaries? Is there anything that's going to hold him back? And that's the point Daniel's having. This is somebody who doesn't have that inner little voice that says, don't do that. It's not a good idea. That's not appropriate. And, you know, we all can ignore that voice, or sometimes it kicks in after we've done something. Whoops, you shouldn't have done that. That was inappropriate. Oh, well, where were you 20 seconds ago? But this is somebody who has put themselves up as a god. And if you go into Roman history, because that's what we have prevalently, easily accessible, the guys that became emperors and Caesars, they did. I mean, when you get to Jesus' time, who are they supposed to worship? Caesar. Caesar was considered a god, which is kind of going backwards, because you go back to Egypt, you know, and some of the pharaohs way back, they were supposed to be deities. Oftentimes, going forward in time, they were at least ordained by God. That's what that was their claim, to be on the throne. I'm on the throne because God put me there, not because my dad was the king and I inherited it from him, or because we killed a bunch of people and got there, but, you know, God put me there. But this guy says, I am God. I am a God. I don't care about other gods.
And then you look at the history of the Roman emperors, and the idea of being self-aggrandizing is very strong. Most of them are loony. They end up being killed by their own people.
Well, this one comes across as loony. Because it goes on, okay, self-aggrandizing, but what does he do about all the traditions and the old ways? He tosses them out. Disregard for traditional values, respect, religion, all of that stuff. He doesn't worship the same. He doesn't worship God, but not only does he not worship God, he doesn't worship any of the old gods. He doesn't care about any of them, which is kind of a big thing. He said, you know what, all of it, out the door. All the traditions, no, we're going to do this new stuff now. Whatever I come up with, that's what we're going to do. What does this king actually worship or follow on?
Himself.
But what does he seek after? What is his goal?
What you have up there, power.
Right. Power, manipulation through wealth, greed. I don't know that necessarily sounds like anybody recent times that might be in power of anything. But the forsaking of all these traditional things and looking for this. You know, lots of people have various focuses, and we kind of get tied up in that idea of idol worship. What is idol worship? Well, it's not necessarily worship of Baal and Asherah, although oddly those things are coming back in American society. There are these groups that actually worship Druidic, and yes, that the witchcraft and all that stuff is actually a growing segment. Coincidentally, on the rise with marijuana and other such drugs becoming more popular, witchcraft, which is actually tied to the same word, pharmaceutical. Yeah, anyways, one of life's little interesting things. But this guy is going to go his own way and worship his own God, and lots of people fall into this category now. It's idol worship still, even if it's not what we would consider from a biblical perspective, looking in the Old Testament, what they called an idol. It doesn't have to be a wooden statue to be an idol. All right. So verse 45, this guy, he gets really stuck on himself. He really thinks the world of himself. He seeks after strong fortresses, power, and everything. But what happens at the end? Nope, there's several people who have fallen recently who were exalted for a long time because they got lots of power, but in the last couple months some things have come out and they've lost all that. And I think that some of those guys were to die right now, they wouldn't have a lot of tears for them. Was that guy Harvey Weinstein or something? I think if that guy fell over dead from something right now, there wouldn't be a lot of people mourning him or saying good things about him. Oh, he was such a great, I don't think with the current atmosphere. So he kind of fits, and we can kind of see how this is the case. that, yes, somebody who abuses everything and is out for themselves and does so blatantly, as this ruler does here in Daniel, nobody's going to before him. Now here we have some examples that fit into this. Antiochus, Caesar, pagan Rome, the Holy Roman Empire, Islam, the Ottoman Empire, Nazism, communism, all of these kind of values that these have exemplified fall into this. As much as people think that, you know, communism isn't about power and manipulation through wealth, it turns out every time it's implemented, that's exactly what it's about, is power and manipulation of wealth, usually at the very top of whoever's in charge doing all that. All right, so we'll continue next week then with our summary of Daniel 11, and got a slide on that, and then we'll get into the Daniel chapter 12. If anyone has anything they